presenters of today, as we continue to engage with the preservation and development of agricultural land bill. We will be receiving responses which will be presented by our content advisors in the Portfolio Committee on Agriculture, Land Reform and Rural Development, as well as from legal services, who will take us through further deliberations on the pedal bill. Allow me to welcome the officials of the Department of Agriculture, Land Reform and Rural Development, as led by the DDG, Dr. Serage Memaja, and Dr. Sibifer, our stakeholders that are here with us. Good morning. Honorable members, we'll apologize for the delays that we may have had due to traffic and members arriving late on the buses. But without any further delays, we will get straight into the business of the day. Allow me to invite our content advisors to take us through the responses and deliberations. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair. Good morning, and good morning to members and colleagues. Chair, what we have today is high-level overview of the key issues raised by stakeholders, both from the written and oral submissions, specifically issues from the provincial public hearings that the committee undertook throughout all nine provinces. So the focus of today's presentation will be mostly on the provincial hearings, as the responses from the department did not comprehensively cover the issues that were raised in the provincial issues. However, there are issues that have been common from those that were raised by stakeholders in provinces, as well as those from the recent written submissions and also the oral submissions that were made by stakeholders here in Parliament. One of the issues that we identified that we feel needs attention and recognition is the consultation and non-recognition of traditional leaders. This was raised consistently throughout provinces, and especially given the fact that the state law advisors have agreed with the legal advisors also here in Parliament that the bill doesn't entail a customary law, so there was no need to refer it to the National House of Traditional Leaders. However, stakeholders throughout provinces, not necessarily even the traditional leaders themselves, felt that that was very necessary, that traditional leaders be consulted and considered, even in the drafting of the bill, considering that they are the ones that administer and they are also custodians of communal land. All stakeholders highlighted the fact that even those that are practicing small-scale agriculture, they have access to land that they have received through traditional leaders. So therefore, they do play a significant role in the administration of communal land. Stakeholders throughout the provinces also further proposed that the bill needs to ensure that traditional leaders who are custodians of communal land and therefore involved in its administration should be considered and involved in the institutional structures as envisaged in Chapter 4 of the bill. The advisory committee, for example, to the minister or MEC, they highlighted the fact that those advisory committees shouldn't only be the responsibility of technocrats, but should be inclusive and operate in a bottom-up approach. Some of the issues, this is not a comprehensive list, but it includes those issues that we felt specifically refer to communal farmers or people on communal land and also small-scale farmers. Stakeholders raised the fact that it seems like the bill was drafted with large-scale commercial agricultural enterprises in mind. And this was more reflected in some of the technical definitions and also the applicability. So they felt that the bill didn't take into account the fact that South Africa is a dual agricultural sector. And so some of the definitions are not relevant to communal and subsistence farming, as much as the department has indicated that the bill is applicable to all land, including communal land. However, that is not expressed in the definition. Some of the examples are agricultural potential. The definition of agricultural potential according to the bill, the farming unit and viable farming unit, which are all premised on financial investment and also profitability. In this instance, disadvantaging subsistence and resource poor farmers, because usually those farmers, not all of them, are farming to make profit. Also, the land owner, I think the department admitted that it is going to consider this, because the landowner, in terms of the definition, it recognizes the registration according to the Deeds Registries Act, which means it only refers to someone who owns land, who has a title deed. And in this instance, communal farmers and other small-scale farmers, they don't have title deeds. They don't own land. Some have access through traditional leadership, while some are listed. In addition to the above definitions, and despite the assertions from the department that the bill will apply to all land and land users in the Republic, we felt that it might be difficult and costly for communal and small-scale farmers in particular to meet some of the requirements that are envisaged in Section 15 or Clause 15.4, for example, that deals with agro-ecosystem authorizations, as well as the fines that are proposed under Clause 35. For those people that are not complying to their authorizations. The definition of farmer as well excludes persons that are employed by the farmer. In this regard, stakeholders had a concern about the impact that the declaration of protected agricultural areas might have on the tenure security of farm dwellers and labor tenants. As the bill seeks to preserve and develop agricultural land, the stakeholders felt that it needs to have a clause that provides for funding of communal and small-scale farmers so that they can expand and develop land through the provision of basic necessities of agricultural production, and also further outline how small-scale farmers will be assisted in line with Clause 4F more Roman numeral 3, I don't know how to call that number. In this regard, there was a proposal that since a preserve or preservation has been defined in the bill, so develop or development as well might need to be defined specifically for the purpose or with regards to the bill, and also sustainable development. And also one of the stakeholders also felt that that's from the oral submissions that we heard here, development framework specifically in respect of the bill might also need to be defined. Another proposal, this came out a lot throughout provinces, the use of agricultural land should not be confined to food production or only food security. And there was a call for the recognition of other uses, such as fiber, medicinal purposes, cultural purposes, and spiritual purposes. Different stakeholders emphasized and cited examples where other legislation didn't recognize cultural and spiritual purposes, and felt that this legislation, particularly as it applies to all land in the country, should recognize those other uses. The department in its responses did indicate that it will reconsider, because one of the stakeholders raised the issue of only citing food security as the main objective should be rectified to include these other uses. So the department has consider to relook at this one. Impact of climate change. Stakeholders in provinces felt that this is not explicitly given due consideration in the bill. The department did respond when climate change was felt, when stakeholders felt that it was lacking, that it will be addressed through the agro-system delineation, the agricultural sector plans, and through their implementation, as well as the applicable relevant agro-ecosystems. However, stakeholders felt that to address climatic changes, there should be an up-to-date, regularly maintained, and easily accessible database on agricultural, climatic, and soil conditions for the country. Just to assist, maybe to bring expression on climate change being explicit, maybe it might be included in the prescribed criteria for the compilation of agricultural sector plans on clause 6. Requiring provinces, maybe national, whoever is responsible for the development of the sector plans, to also respond to climatic changes. One other issue that was raised that might relate to the impact of climate change was that the bill does not take into account land use change as a result of ecological constraints or climatic changes. This comes from, say, stakeholders that already own land, agricultural land, and maybe are farmers, and then subject to those ecological or climatic constraints or changes, then they will be forced to effect a change of land use to adapt to those changes. There were concerns that there might be restrictions regarding the sale of their land or the change in land use as indicated. However, the department has given assurance that the bill is not meant and will not interfere with activities that are already happening on privately owned properties, or how people or land users are supposed to farm. However, there is no clear provision for land users on public or communal land, because those do not have title deeds. And that came out a lot during the provincial hearings, because there's always uncertainty. Even those with leases, those are for a short-term period. The advisory committee, as previously mentioned, that is proposed, is one of the institutional structures proposed in Chapter 4 of the bill. There was a proposal that it should also recognize the expertise of private individuals and civil society organizations that are already involved in facilitating and promoting conservation agriculture. One of the stakeholders, I think that was BACF, they even had a proposed configuration of the numbers that must constitute the advisory committee. However, the department was of the opinion that the configuration of the advisory committee is sufficient as it stands. However, in light of climate change, which has already been highlighted by stakeholders as an issue that needs to be taken consideration of, and given the definition of sustainable agriculture within the bill, which puts emphasis on practices having a site-specific application that complements ecological and biodiversity conservation, expertise on conservation agriculture might be useful to have someone with that kind of expertise as part of the advisory committee. Regulation of game farming. In some provinces, there were concerns that were raised by stakeholders about game farming and how the bill does not provide clarity on biodiversity management in respect of keeping game or wildlife. Except the only mention that has been made is in the definition of agricultural purposes, where there's reference on keeping livestock or wild animals. Stakeholders felt that the department in this regard needs to clarify whether game farming in the country is administered solely by the department, DALRAT, or the Department of Forestry, Fisheries, Environment, because there has been some confusion in some instances on which department people practicing game farming should be administered by or be referred to. So if they propose that they should also, the department should further clarify how game farming will be regulated through PDAL bill. Some of the stakeholders that rejected the bill in the provincial hearings highlighted the cost and administrative burden that the bill proposes to farmers and other spheres of government. As a result, they feel that this will render the bill implementable because of the bureaucratic and extended processes involved. In this regard, it was proposed that the Sala Repeal Act should be signed into law and a new policy be developed to ensure transformation and land reform is also included in the preservation and development of agricultural land. given the key role that is going to be played by local governments, the stakeholders highlighted the lack of a policy to manage and regulate the use of municipal colleges. Most of the stakeholders that have access to commonages for agricultural purposes, they highlighted that municipalities do not see farming as their responsibility. Even in cases where a municipality has issued a lease for farmers to use a commonage, they do not provide any services to assist the farmers. And they also mentioned the fact that municipalities prioritize, some of them prioritize commonages for housing development instead of agricultural production. In this regard, stakeholders sought clarity on the management responsibility for commonages and the impact that will have on the implementation of PDAL. Monitoring and evaluation. The bill does provide for monitoring, evaluation, and assessment of the implementation through the agroecosystem authorizations. However, some of the stakeholders felt that the bill should provide for an establishment of an independent business chamber for the monitoring and evaluation role of its implementation, instead of the function being the sole responsibility of the minister and or MECs, as currently proposed on clause 23 of the bill. Accessible and effective means of communication. This we included because it came out consistently. Most stakeholders indicated in provinces that they don't have access to the government gazette and even national newspapers. So such media of communication is not effective, particularly for people in communal areas or rural areas. Therefore, other media such as community radio stations, TV, and even municipal offices should be considered, and communication should also be in local languages, as not everybody is well conversant with English. The department has accepted this proposal, so they will be effecting it in the bill. Intergovernmental relations. Stakeholders complained about poor coordination between government departments and how this, if not addressed, will negatively impact the capacity to implement PDAL, particularly as it involves all three spheres of government. And if departments continue working in silos and relying on implementing agencies in some instances. In one submission where a stakeholder raised the issue in the case, for example, agroecosystem authorizations, if there is a conflict amongst the different spheres or different departments or ministries, rather, how will those conflicts be addressed? And the department's response was that those will be addressed through intergovernmental relations processes. Stakeholders felt that there should be a clause that clearly strengthens intergovernmental relations to ensure that the bill is effectively implemented. And further, they felt that relevant officials from local government and departments that will be responsible for the implementation of the bill should be capacitated. Concurrency of agriculture. We included this, but it will probably be need a legal mind because we can't really explain it. But there were some issues that were raised regarding the wording in the bill where provisions will have direct and significant impact and consequences at provincial level. And it was recommended that they may be amended to require the concurrence of the MEC in the province in which the land is situated. Because in PDAL, as agriculture is concurrent, some competences lie with the MEC, while some lie with the minister. So in this regard, the proposal was that in a case where, especially where there are special cases in a particular province in terms of agricultural land and its use, then the minister, instead of being the main authority, should require the concurrence of the MEC responsible in that province. These were, there might be more clauses, but clause 5.2, in terms of exclusions from land evaluation and classification, according to the bill, this is the responsibility of the minister. And also clause 16, 1, 2, and 3, in terms of listing activities and agricultural areas, this is also proposed as the responsibility of the minister. The department didn't agree with the proposal, but the minister should seek concurrence with the MEC in this regard, and they felt that the minister is the competent authority. Integration of authorizations. In terms of clauses 14 and 15, stakeholders felt that the bill will introduce greater regulation on land owners or users in respect of agro-system authorization. And it is not clear in the bill how this will be addressed. For example, the complexity of getting accreditation for land use, as there are different processes between local government, provinces, and national government. Examples were made in terms of authorization processes, in terms of SPLUMA, NEMA, and the Mineral and Petroleum Resources Development Act, and how these will be integrated, and what weight will the PDLB carry, for example, in cases where the MPRTA has already issued mining licenses, and also in areas that are protected under NEMA. An integrated system of authorization was proposed in respect of water licenses, land, environmental matters, etc., such as that provided under the Mineral and Petroleum Resources Development Act. In terms of the integration of authorizations, we also received a late submission from the Ministry of Forestry, Fisheries and Environment, which does not support the identification of activities requiring agro-authorization for persons conducting activities on agricultural land. This was also highlighted by stakeholders, the possible duplication, because NEMA is already has those provisions. So the minister also, in this regard, highlighted that they, as DFFE, they do not support the listing in the PDAL bill, because those provisions are already in NEMA, including activities that will have a detrimental effect on the environment, including agricultural land. The submission further specifies that the Environmental Impact Assessment Regulations of 2014, listing notices 1 to 3 as amended, already include agricultural activities and activities that have to be taken on sensitive environments, which could include high potential agricultural land. The submission also stated the fact that this submission was submitted to the department in November last year. Sorry, not last year, 2020. That was before the bill was introduced in Parliament, but was not taken into consideration. So the submission from DFFE also highlights the need to avoid parallel authorization systems, so as to simplify, streamline, and avoid duplication of decision-making processes within government as required by the NDP. This, we felt that it was necessary to include, maybe the department might respond on this one, because the stakeholders also emphasize the need for the integration of authorizations, particularly in respect of NEMA, SPLUMA, and in some cases the Mineral Resources Act. Possible implications. That, the implementation of the bill, the cost of land evaluation and classification. This might, and also possible limitation to agricultural land subdivision that may lead to higher land prices, distortion in prices if, for example, farmers have those that own land, have to sell it in large chunks instead of being able to subdivide it into pieces. That may negatively impact access to agricultural land by resource-poor farmers. And on this instance, I might add that some stakeholders are for subdivision of agricultural land, particularly for the purposes of food security for resource-poor farmers in terms of household food security or subsistence farming. One stakeholder also highlighted the fact that most communal areas have not been surveyed. So the information that is available on agricultural land and potential is largely on commercially farmed land. So there is a lot of information that still needs to be collected in this regard. Therefore, provinces where former homelands are located are likely to need additional resources and capacity to gather information that will inform provincial agricultural sector plans. One of the issues that we felt it's necessary to raise is uncertainty regarding the implementability of the bill due to the issues that we were hoping maybe legal services can assist this issue with, can better explain of traditional leadership that hasn't been consulted and their role in the administration or allocation of communal land, and also lack of human resource capacity and financial resources. Some stakeholders mentioned that this applies to both public and the private sector, where they are required to develop and enforce the implementation of the sector plans and to establish and review the agro ecosystem authorization, as well as enforcing compliance to authorization. The department indicated that PDAL bill is a framework legislation. So its implementation will take place at local government level. However, it is well known that most municipalities have fiscal constraints and also do not have the human resource capacity that may be required to effectively implement the bill. Some stakeholders raised that the fact that implementation will take place at local government might be an unfunded mandates, given that municipalities are not supporting farmers currently, as has been mentioned in those that have access to communities. Furthermore, during the provincial hearings, it became apparent that most municipalities are not familiar with the PDAL bill and the obligations it will place on them once it's signed into law. The department's response in terms of uncertainty regarding capacity and resource availability is that they are developing a plan to address the issues relating to capacity or lack of it thereof. I'm not sure if my colleagues have something extra to add.
Thank you. Good morning, Chair. Good morning, members. I think I must congratulate my colleague for really taking time to put a thorough presentation. I'm tempted to see I've covered. except to perhaps to emphasize a few points, and you know, people who know me that I always have a bias for land reform. You know, so when I look at these legislation, I always put a lens of, you know, land reform and rural development. Perhaps the point that Nokzola didn't make, when you look at it, it would seem like people are rejecting. I think the point that we agree is that majority of people, most of them that came, said we support the legislation. We need this legislation. It's quite important. And they said, but then they raise all these issues that she has outlined. And I think the key issue that came out was that the committee must look at these issues and try and improve the legislation so that it covers the views of the public. So in looking at this legislation, you know, from the lens that I have, you know, she mentioned the issue about, and I'll phrase it differently, and we had people saying, well, this is not about us. And what they were saying is that this legislation lacks this transformative sort of element, in the sense that when you look at land in South Africa, we're not starting from a common ground or a field that is leveled. We're coming in a place where there are huge inequalities in terms of access, in terms of control. So when the legislation comes with the language, technical language that speaks about viability, you know, farm sizes and all that, and also speaks about prohibition of subdivision or even discouraging it as it's written in the recommendation. Majority of the small-scale subsistence producers in communal land, who some of them do not have land, they're in the backyard gardens and they want land. So they see this piece of legislation as a legislation that will actually end up in a way, preventing them to access land at that small scale level. And I went to look at the benefit, I don't know, you know, for better, in terms of rephrasing, the beneficiary selection and allocation policy. It speaks about a different categories of farmers or producers, and some of them are the vulnerable ones. All they need is land to produce for household consumption. Some of them don't have land, so it targets those types of people. Some of them are already at a subsistence, also with market, with a cap in terms of their revenue. They do not have land, they need land. So the idea that land reform will bring transformation by acquiring large-scale commercial farms and subdivide it and allocate small parcels of land to these people, the question is, does this piece of legislation encourage that type of an approach, or it is actually looking at agriculture in terms of large-scale commercial, the needs of these landless people who are landless not because of their own making, because of the system that we had in the country for many, many years. They find themselves where they are. Now, if the legislation will take, you know, prime agricultural land, high-value agricultural land, and demarcate and say it's only for agriculture, and this will be a viable unit in terms of the legislation, and it's for production, for commercial purposes and things like that, then it puts these people outside. All they can do is to work within these small spaces of land which are already congested. So I tried to look at it in that way, and I thought that's what members of the public were raising in terms of the focus, mainly on the large-scale commercial farm. Let's look at an example of what's happening in land reform now. Communal property associations. You know, because we are not subdividing, we're having large groups of agricultural enterprises, and people are fighting for these units. Imagine what would have happened if some of these pieces of land, we have taken them and subdivided and allocated small units. Perhaps some of the challenges we're seeing within CPAs, where people are fighting for resources, we wouldn't be seeing those types. So if I look at the challenges of communal properties association, and where people are fighting and say, how do we get out of this? And one of the issues that has been raised, you know, in many platforms is about thinking around, you know, subdivision. And here we think, it looks like, you can correct me if I'm wrong, but it looks like there's a very strong push towards prohibiting or limiting, as you put it. Just the idea of the, you know, subdivision. If you read the presidential advisory panel report, actually it critiques this notion of viability and say, well, and I'm quoting it, says it's based on archaic views that regarded small farms as unviable, and therefore they critique Zala and say it's antithetical to land reform agenda, and therefore they make a very strong case for subdivision of agricultural land to meet the high level land needs. You spoke about municipalities. If you go and look at the white paper on land reform, the 1997 one, it also envisions subdivision of land. For instance, it recognizes municipalities that they can establish garden allotments, so they can buy land and do allotment for purposes of food production by these you know, landless people in the peri-urban and urban areas for food production. So that's the sense I'm getting, and that's the view that when I listened to members of the public raising these issues, I thought these are the issues that relate particularly to how they think legislation should empower them. But I do know also that the Provision of Land and Assistance Amendment Act, the Act Number 58 of 2008, if I have to quote it, I think it's in Section 10.2, it says, the laws governing land use, subdivision or consolidation of land or the establishment of townships shall not apply to land contemplated in this act unless the minister directs otherwise. So in a way, legislation says land under land reform can be exempted from these laws about land use planning and subdivision, but we know that in terms of practice currently it is not happening. So I just thought I'd also make members aware of this clause and how does it relate to what we're talking about in terms of prohibiting or limiting subdivision, and that there is another legislation that's exempting land reform. The issue around tenure security, I think she explained it very well. Now, what came to my mind was the old lady in Gonko in Limpopo saying, I have piece of land here, but these big guys in big cars, they come and take it from me. I've invested everything I have. And all she was saying is that government officials, municipal officials, and business people, they come, they want to take land from her because she doesn't have tenure security. And she raises a question and says, you're talking about preservation and protection, but you do not give us security of tenure. In this case, she was talking about title deeds. And we do know that in terms of customary law, it is not the only form of security of tenure, but means by which she can secure. Now, argument can be said to say, but this legislation is not about this. And the members of communities were addressing the portfolio committee to say, yes, we welcome this, but these are other areas that you are not looking at while you have this piece of legislation. On the other hand, we are becoming poorer and weaker in terms of security on land because there is no law that protects us. Most of the white commercial farmers, they are secure. You can't just go in and do as you wish. But in communal areas, you may be plowing on a piece of land tomorrow, you hear that no, it's been allocated to another businessman. And how do you protect and preserve that land which people are using? I'm just imagining a scenario where such piece of land is now demarcated as high value agricultural land in these traditional areas. What systems of protection do we have when people do not have security of tenure? The issue around traditional leaders and also municipalities, we think that it's one issue that the committee must really apply its mind. We propose, and colleagues will know from the department that when the previous committee, the land reform committee, dealt with SPLUMA, there was a question like this. This piece of legislation does not affect customs, and therefore it's not necessary to refer to the National House of Traditional Leaders. And that point was made quite strongly, and the committee was convinced that indeed it doesn't affect customs. But let's look at what happened after that. Then the committee had to receive a request for engagement from the House of Traditional Leaders saying, but you can't sit and talk about land that we administer without hearing from us. You may say it doesn't affect, but you're taking decisions about land that we administer as traditional leaders. So we back in that. I looked at a study that was conducted by Dubazane and Nell from University of Free State. They did a study in KZN at Mashaizeni Traditional Council and in Council Local Municipality, where they actually show us how municipalities, in terms of systems of land use management, how the Ingonyama Trust Board, how the traditional council itself in terms of traditional use of land, how all these, they come together in terms of decisions about land. And one of the things that I thought it's important to remark about is that they say in their report that because traditional leaders see this legislation as something that's beginning to take their powers away, it's not something that they support. And I don't know the state of affairs at this present moment. Perhaps it's one agenda item that the committee might need to look at to receive a briefing from the department of where we are in terms of SPLUMA. Just just to understand the dynamics around the relationship of traditional leaders and municipalities. But what they found was that in some communities, municipal officials were not allowed to go into communities to do the assessment of land, to do the surveys of land for the purposes of zoning. Now, these piece of legislation, I don't know whether it will be, you know, a desktop exercise, whether officials will be going into communities to do all these assessments to make determinations about whether this is a protected or high-value agricultural land. But how do you begin to go into this area and have engagement with on land without engaging traditional leaders? It's a big concern. I think that, and I'm not a lawyer, but from understanding how you know, decisions about land are taken in communal areas, I think this legislation does have an impact on the customs of communities. How do people take decisions about land in communal areas? Well, it depends. It varies from community to community. Some decisions are taken at a khotla, koro, or, you know, to say this land is going to be used for this particular purpose. Now, if there is a legislation that says the minister in consultation with the MEC might decide to take to exclude certain land from an agricultural land, that decision, I'm just giving an example here, and that land is currently being used for agriculture, but a decision is taken elsewhere and say it's excluded, opening up space for other interests to come and use that land for other purposes. Doesn't it then lead to tensions and conflicts within communities? Let's just think about an example of Koloveni perhaps, where there's this disputes around land. And say, for instance, in that case, the decision was taken to say it's not agricultural land, but local communities are saying, well, we make our livelihoods here, this is, but a decision is taken. So what becomes of that community on the of land? So I'm just giving an example, but also saying if you decide that a land under Inkosi, you know, managed in terms of custom is not agricultural land without engaging with it, what does it say about the role of that traditional council that takes decisions about what, you know, what land is used for what purposes in terms of their customary practices, in terms of their customary law? I think there's something that I had hoped that our legal services also might engage a little bit on that. Yes, I'm not going to go into detail about just the complexity of communal areas. If you go to KZN, when they say a homestead, it's a home. They have a crawl. It's got grazing around. So the idea that you know this can be purely be agricultural land, and this is a residential, it becomes a bit hazy. I think I have touched on the issues, the complexities around Pluma. The other question that I think Nokuzola also addressed is monitoring and accountability on this. Somewhere in the legislation it speaks about the MEC tabling a report to the minister, but it ends there if I get it right. So there's no way where Parliament gets that report. And whether it's important or not, I don't know. I would leave it to the committee. But if you look at the CPA Act, you know, reports about CPAs gets tabled. I don't know if it's necessary for this type of work to just for the committee to be able to assess, or everyone in the country to be able to assess and monitor how we are, how the country is doing in terms of monitoring this piece of legislation is dealt with. Nokuzola spoke a lot about the gazetting. Yes. It's a big issue where your gazette becomes the only thing, you know, you use to communicate. But if you look at just within this department, if you look at Pluma, it's quite explicit about using other forms of media. If you look at the Restitution of Land Rights Act, it becomes very explicit in terms of how you make some, you know, for instance, gazetting, you know, of a land claim known in that particular district. It forces you to go to that district and make it known. So if a decision, I'm just giving an example now, if a decision is made about certain lands to be a protected agricultural land, why is it not that you can actually go to that region but make it known in that area? But otherwise, my colleague covered all the points. Thank you very much.
Any other colleagues?
No, just one clarification. There is no provision actually in the PDAL bill that says that subdivision is prohibited. But that fear comes from the fact that the terminology is geared towards large-scale commercial farming. So there's no explicit provision on how subsistence or small-scale farmers will continue operate. I just wanted to clear.
Thank you, honorable members. That is our presentation and briefing from our content advisors in terms of the responses that we have had regarding the preservation and development of agricultural bill. We do, as I alluded earlier, have with us Mema Hlalele from the legislation specialist in the department. I see I need thicker glasses. When I looked earlier, I thought it was Memaja sitting with us. And now Ralph is going to need to make sure that I get thicker lenses to see properly. So if there's any input on your side, Mema Hlalele, we'll get, but we also, honorable members, before we may give room to the department, have from the state law advisor, and Sean Van Breda, who is here, you're most welcome. If there's any further input that you may wish to give on the bill, you're also most welcome. Informed that also the parliamentary legal advisor has just joined us, so you're most welcome as well. Any further input from the state law advisor?
Yes, Chair, thank you. Good morning. Chair, regarding the referral of the bill to the traditional house of the House of Traditional Leaders, rather. Chair, we merely express a view in that regard, and we stand by the view that we are of the opinion that the provisions of the bill don't have an effect on customary law or customs of traditional leaders, of traditional communities. Chair, the ultimate decision is made by the joint tagging mechanism. Obviously, the Parliament's not bound by any view which we express, but I think that's the only input I want to make in respect of that issue.
Thank you for the input from the state law advisor. Anything from the department, Mema Hlalele?
Thank you very much, Chair. The surname is actually Mashaela. Mashaela, I think. Good morning, Chair. Good morning, members. The comments were quite substantive, so I'm going to try and deal with some. Then the DDG and Ms. Kosoha will deal with those that I do leave out. The issue around traditional leaders seems to be coming out quite a lot. I think it's two-faced. First is about the development of the bill and the issue that Mr. Van Breda spoke to about the tagging. So it is not the department that decides how it's tagged and whether it goes to the National House or not. But inside the bill itself, the department has provided for quite extensive mechanisms of consultation. As and when they go into a province to go, and maybe a decision is made to consider declaring a particular part a protected agricultural land, extensive consultation mechanisms have been provided for. I think that will also simultaneously address the issue of using different types of media, particularly radio and languages in that are spoken in the area. The regulations in Clause 35 makes provision for the minister to go and work out manners in which these consultations are going to be done. So in there we will provide for the different types of media, for radio, for notices and things like that. And then the definition of a cultural land, we did respond earlier that it is wide enough to include land in communal areas. So we I think it was in the responses that we dealt with when we did our formal response as a department. There was a comment that the department should consider making provision for having experts on climate change as part of the advisory committees. Clause 22.1 of the bill provides that the minister can appoint technical advisors. And technical advisors would be, on a case-by-case basis, they might be, could include your climate change experts. So the current configuration of the advisory committee is sufficient, but can be built up as and when there's a need for other types of expertise that are not specified in the clause on the advisory committee. Yeah, the communication part has been dealt with. IGR came in quite a lot, particularly with reference to NEMA, PLUMA, and MPRDA. In our responses, we had said that there will be consultations and the integration of authorizations, as mentioned in clause 14 and 15, the regulations are going to go into detail because we couldn't put, or the drafters at the time did not put the substance on that, but the regulations are empowering the minister to make regulations in terms of what that is going to look like, this integration and work, particularly when you're considering applications or when decisions are made about declaring protected agricultural areas. My notes are very... the issue around, maybe just to amplify the one on traditional leaders, I think what needs to be taken into account is that the aim of the bill is to be able to capacitate the traditional leaders when they're making decisions, specifically when we provide them with agroecological information, particularly around agricultural production potential, crop suitability, livestock potential, so that as and when they're making decisions, they have this information that the department will have made available to them. I'm going to park here and ask the DDG to take into account while I go through what I might have missed in my notes.
Thank you, and good morning to Honourable Chairperson and Honourable Members, colleagues and colleagues from the panel. I think most of the, since this has started as far back as 2015, 2016, most of the work, consultations and everything else happened, but maybe because of time, that's why during the public hearing it seemed like sufficient consultations were not made. For instance, the matter about consultation with the traditional leaders, that was done sufficiently, and even as far as the Ngonyama Trust and in the main, there was overwhelming support for this bill. And I think for it to be easier, it would help if we approach it from this angle. The angle that says subdivision of agricultural land is currently regulated by SALA. Hiring, leasing of agricultural land is currently regulated. A lot of activities that happen on agricultural land are regulated as it is. So this will not be a new phenomenon. But why we came up with PDAL is because of a few areas of shortcomings within the SALA subdivision of agricultural land of 1970. This includes in the main the following. One is that the SALA does not apply to land that is owned by state and government, and that includes municipalities and the provincial departments and traditional authorities. So that is one of the shortcomings of SALA. Now, in trying to ensure that prime and high value agricultural land in totality, even that which is within the traditional authority ownership and everywhere else, then PDAL was decided upon. I always give this example, honorable members, that if the commercial sector, this big commercial outfits, wants to turn the land, high value agricultural land, into a shopping mall, the first thing they do is to first donate it to, because they know, and that was a loophole, they would have it donated to the municipality or to the traditional authority. Once it is owned by a traditional authority or municipality, they know very well that then they would have been able to bypass SALA. Then development happens, irrespective of whether that land is high-value agricultural land. The reality is that we are moving from a premise that says of the available land, agricultural land in the country, very little is remaining, and there's constant. In fact, if one of the members maybe we'll make a report just on another day to show just on energy, just on solar panels and wind and related, the number of applications that we receive wherein applicants and all those who own land want to convert such land into renewable energy and related activities. That shows that there is a need for us to preserve this, because we do approve some and we take into account some of the realities that are facing the country, but the reality is that the land, the prime agricultural land, the size is dwindling, it's becoming smaller and smaller, hence the need for PDAL. So what PDAL does in essence is that it recognizes, and the beauty of it is that it's now it's a bill which is new and takes into account all other available the regulatory framework and the laws of the country. SPLUM, for instance, SPLUM or SPLUM Act. SPLUM Act, in fact, there's a very specific, precise referral. If you look at SPLUM Act, Section 7 of this SPLUM Act and 21, it also enshrines or protects the high value in, I'm paraphrasing, high value agricultural land. It recognizes that there's land that should only be the preserve for agricultural purposes. So all these, including the NIMBA and the NIMA, and the lot of other land agricultural use or land use are catered for. So again, I think these are the things that I picked up. Climate change, which is one of them. Like I think my colleague has touched on that, which in the main we're saying the bill is such, it's written such that there will always be a room for minister to appoint advisors and to have committees and for international intergovernmental relations to happen. So it's a comprehensive piece of draft legislation, which if enacted, we don't foresee any challenges. I know I'm not responding to specific questions, but I just picked up those that I think would become salient, also from the content advisors, the issue that in fact, in one of our response through the public hearing, we even committed that we may want to go back, because this the consultation was done as far as back as 2015, 2016. So we may want, I mean, obviously community dynamics have changed and everything else. Maybe that's why. But other than that, we don't foresee any problems and any challenges. In fact, this will lessen the burden and will actually ensure that there's clear regulatory framework. The cost which came from the content advisors, we don't expect. We've got already resources. We've got capacity in the department under the sub branch natural resource management. We don't intend. There's no need for us, because the same team that is managing subdivision of agricultural land would then manage PDAL. As a matter of fact, SALA is a very complex because of the shortcomings. People or commercial outfits have now learned the loopholes, and on a daily basis we're sitting with applications, and when we reject applications for subdivision or for leasing, we are then taken up court. There's a lot of court cases because people have noticed these loopholes. So we'll use the same team that we use for the same resources that we use for SALA would be used for PDAL. We don't expect any new thing. I think our team also wants to, they're itching to come back on. I think I might have, yes, with your indulgence, Chairperson. Thank you.
Let me come back.
Thank you, Chair. I just wanted to add two things that I had left out. One is the comment that the focus is food production. We had made a concession as well that we will include it to limit that, instead of just saying preserve the area primarily for food production, we will make it for agricultural production, cognizant of the fact that agriculture goes beyond food production. And then the issue around concurrency with the provinces and the lack of consultation, or I think it was that it must be bottom up. It will be noted, Chair, that quite a lot of the provisions where anything that happens in the provinces, the minister only makes a decision after consultation with the MEC. And in some instances, it's the MEC who is the decision maker. So we feel that it is sufficiently provided for that the issue around concurrency, and that the minister is not usurping the powers of the MECs. Yeah, thank you, Chair. These are the two that I wanted to respond to. Thanks.
Thank you, honourable members. If there's no further input, let us open the session for questions of clarity and comments. Honourable Mahlo.
Thank you, Chairperson, and good morning to you and all members of the Portfolio Committee, including our officials from the department. Chair, I would like to welcome the presentations by our team from the department. The presentation was just capturing everything that we witnessed when we were on site, when we were doing our oversight work. Definitely show some of the things they need the portfolio committee to sit down and look at some of the things that we can make input through the help of the department where they see there is a lack of something that we did not cover. Yes, it is important, Chair, that the traditional leaders specifically, they be consulted fully. Because when you talk about communal land, you are talking about the land that is mostly on their doorsteps. It's where we live. They need to be engaged fully, Chair, so that together we can govern our country and make sure that our people, they get the space where they can be able to deliver services to their communities. The majority of small farmers, smallholder farmers, as they were indeed outlining that they feel like as if we have done this bill for those that are already having the land in their hands. Indeed, you could feel when you look at those people when they talk, yes, it was difficult. We agree that really something must be done so that where that some of the things that need to be beefed up, we need to beef it up so that our small for older farmers, they can be able to feel and have a buy-in on the bill. I think, Chair, the other thing that I would like to touch is just on the issue of human resource and the capacity in the government. As the committee, we must make sure that indeed we look at this issue to make sure that our department has that capacity and the resources to make sure that things are going smoothly as it's supposed to be. When they presented our team from the department, when they talk about monitoring and evaluation, yes, we were there when the communities were telling us that we come up with good laws, but we don't have monitoring and evaluation tools in place, which I think as the committee, we must request our department to come up with a mechanism on how the monitoring and evaluation tool will be, you know, will be looked at, and it must be one of the things that is combined with the issue of communication, so that our people in rural areas, like people in Bochum, when you talk about the website, when you talk about the, some of the people, they don't even have those TVs. But I think we have systems in place which we have all to get, come up with. For example, if you go to local municipalities, we have ward committee members. We have the horo in those traditional leaders' places. Those are some of the systems that can be used to communicate our messages to our people so that people can be able to know what is happening out there. We must get used to use those systems. Because without going to those horrors, those people will never be able to go and see the newspaper in Polokwane or in another town. So those are some of the things that I just wanted to touch, Chair, that I think they need to be taken into consideration from our side when we are talking about this bill, that we want to see it as a law in future. Thank you.
Thank you, Honorable Memaso. The Honorable Metlape.
Thank you, Chair. And once more, let me also appreciate the presentation. For me, it has been a very difficult one. I was checking with everybody, do we have a presentation? And I didn't want to ask the chair because I would not know why actually this one we didn't have. I'm saying this because it's always better to follow and compare your notes with what. So, it has been difficult. But in all fairness, Chair, if we would have had, it would have been simpler also to check on our sides on the responses that we got from the departments previously. And that takes me to one thing that I was thinking because of this difficulty. I don't know, legal gurus are here, why this process is like that, that you get responses first and then the others comes, because I was also assisted by the presenter here, and therefore department has already said 1, 2, 3 on this one. So for me, with my smaller Nyana brain, I said, how I wish they would have came and then the department come and say, or they would have said that these are issues that the department didn't come succinctly on them, or they did not touch, because now it takes me back whilst we thought we have done a work on this one. Fair enough, Chair. For me, like Dr. Manenza indicated, the support for this bill was overwhelming. And the presentations or submissions that are here, some of them answered, some of them still needs to be looked at. The importance of the bill far outweighs the fears that some of the stakeholders would have submitted. I'm saying fears because we sat here with most of those who came, and I said to them, most of them, these are fears of what may not, but we need this bill. And that was the bottom line, taking cognizance of where we are with agricultural land. The issue of traditional leaders, Chair, I am conflicted, or I'm torn apart on this one, as the advice is that it doesn't affect communal or customary land or customary laws or something. And I'm sitting here and asking myself, are they like all other stakeholders that we could say we went there and we spoke to them or we did? But they are organized also at some, on the other side, like those that came here and presented, they are organized, they have a national house. Dr. Manenza is indicating the precedence or where we're coming from on issue study bill in consultation with them. But I'm happy that this also will help them if they have to understand. It will help them to curb what is happening, people just coming and taking on the land. There are also culprits, Chair, not necessarily the one that is sitting before us, because they allocate this land to mining. Probably we would have to talk to them, because when people come with this, they give and they do so. If we have to talk to them and say this seeks to curb or to regulate that, it will take us somewhere. So that's why I'm saying I'm torn apart. But if I think about what they are doing in rural areas, getting all these people prospect and they go and they never come back, it's a problem. They need to understand us. We were told, Chair, previously that some of the concerns here that I call fears would be addressed, as it was indicated, others even by regulations. So for me, it's not too much of concerns that we could look at. I have underlined here issues, it's loss for funding in communal, for communal and scale farmers, especially when they spoke about development. And I'm thinking, Chair, that like the presenter is saying, some of these things that came about, if our farmers or our people would understand that this does not take away the different programs that the department has, and the requirement has always been learned. So let's not worry much about including such clauses, because such would just divert the intention of this bill. If we have applied and there's land somewhere, you will be able to do instead of putting that. Game farming. How game farming will be regulated with PDAL bill. And there's acknowledgement that this is under forestry and fisheries conservation in a way. In my previous life, this was put together, that this Rakhenus in the Northwest, we had agriculture, rural environment, and agriculture development. It was easy. But if you farming, you having diversity or biodiversity enterprise in agricultural land, we will obviously regulate under this. You can't tomorrow say, I have removed my animals, now I'm building houses. This is how PDAL will regulate that. As long as it's called an agricultural land, it's still an agricultural land where it is. I don't think there's confusion in that regard. Managing and regulating of use of municipality common ages, I like it because they say there's lack of policy. So I'm also saying let's not cloud the bill with issues that can be regulated through policies. We'll rather help municipalities in this regard to make sure that their policy speaks to this. But as long as those common ages are under agriculture, we say don't touch them. Don't build houses that you are prioritizing, as our people are saying. They must remain that and have sector plans, as we say in this bill. And those sector plans must be funded, as we say in this bill. So I don't think there are issues also in that regard. I'm just touching here and there, Chair. There's one that, it was addressed, the intergovernmental relations, because I would say I support the department that the minister be the competent authority. I heard how Mayor Mashaile has said it is catered for in the bill. Taking this also from experience, that the provinces are also notorious. Their plans are not the plans of national. If you don't prioritize agriculture in a province, you can end up doing this. And like I said to the mining people here, environment is better because they have protected biospheres. So let's also have our own. So I don't think it is also a problem. I want to talk to the subdivision issue. I listen with interest how Dr. Manenze also is looking at it. I must admit, I never had qualms about subdivisions, even if it was raised. One, for me, it was the subdivision, as I've been saying, if it's an agricultural land and there's pronouncement of redistribution of land and it is subdivided for 20 people who will do agriculture, for me it's still normal. The subdivision that I found to be problematic, that the organized farmers somewhere were fighting for, were subdividing it for a different purpose. Because they were saying, where that land is no longer profitable, they are not making money out of it, that is sometimes the case, then they would want to make profit out of that. And this is what we're saying, that should be prohibited in a way. But that will be through the minister's competency for sure, as Ngaba Kash is saying here, or there's no senior subdivision in the bill and everything. The fear was that if I don't want to farm anymore, I want to convert my land as a commercial farmer or whatever, what do I do? So I don't think subdivisions is an issue here, and this is what this seeks to address. To say where we grew up knowing this is a farmland, all of a sudden when people are claiming this land, they turn it into something else because they know our processes will take forever. Once they say a claim has been lodged, you don't know what is happening. Tomorrow it's high fence, it's an electricity and whatever, it's something else, it's a plant that you don't know, you know what is happening. So I was saying, Che, for me, justice has been done on this one, and I'm still happy with the support we got on public participation, the responses and the acceptance on some instances of the clauses that would be looked at by the department. As for the traditional leaders, looking at the space and time that we have, we would want for sure to create that consultation within the confines of the limited time that we have. Because for me, it will be a very painful thing if we could leave this to lapse and it doesn't see the light of the day, knowing that we are not the only one who must process. It has to be processed by the other house. The energy and whatever that we have put, the expectation of those who supported overwhelmingly this bill is high. So let's do our part. Let's make sure that this bill goes through for the sake of generations to come that would still know that we need this land for food security, not only food security, but agricultural enterprises as other activities will be listed. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Honorable Thapa. The Honorable Bao Thapa.
Thank you, Chair. And thank you from all the presenters. This is, to me, a useful information which tells us what has happened and probably what is going to happen again. First of all, I think we shouldn't be ashamed to come up with this legislation. Anyone who thinks this legislation is not relevant, is not, they are making a mistake. You see, I'm a reader of the Old Testament, and I know that those 10 commandments had to come because things were happening or things were not happening. So this legislation is there because it needs to be there. In fact, some other people even forget that if I'm making an example of the mining committee or council stuff like that, they even forget that this legislation is made because of them, because of the things they are doing on across our land. We want that, those things to stop. So therefore, we should not be apologetic about this coming up with this legislation. But there are a few things, like there was a mention of exemption. No, not exemption, about the rural communities. I don't know whether maybe somewhere there, if there is something that is negative to them, they can be exempted in those things. And then there's also that definition of the development and sustainable development. I wonder if that explanation on the definition of those terms can be implemented or effected where there's a definition of the terms. Maybe that would assist. Now, also, I would like us to be apologetic on the emphasis on food security, because agriculture primarily is for food security. While we have to mention broadly agriculture, but it should not be a shame to mention that it is for food security, because we can end up saying the agriculture production, maybe if it's for hemp, and everybody knows that is a high value crop, and therefore it is agriculture, we can take any land and forget about food security. It's important that food security should not disappear in this process. And also, maybe on these definitions, we could consider including these land uses which might be used to argue against the legislation, so that these legislations may be, they are provided from the beginning, that change of land use can be applied for under such conditions and implemented if it's necessary and approved or not approved, if there's a need of that application for the change of land use. There is that part where Dr. Manenje was somehow becoming euphemistic and being polite. In those areas, those people were very emphatic and emphasizing that this legislation is very good. It must be done. But most of the thing, provided ABCD happens, provided we have the title deeds for the land, provided we have the land, provided we have access to this land. And therefore, those are the things we should be able to answer to strengthen our way forward in this legislation, so that if, when they put those conditions, how do we answer to them? How do we make them believe that legislation will work, even if they have such complaints? I'm very comfortable with your position on that concurrence. I was worried because I know that that concurrence of our national department with the provinces, it is always having shortcomings. So I'm saying I'm happy, very happy with your emphasis on that. It seems there has been very little or no mention of those who absolutely oppose legislation and how we respond to them. You remember the guy from the race relations and the one from the mining. These, to me, were clearly opposed to the legislation in a very clear way, and they need to be replied to and to know actually that the legislation is made because they do these things on the land that is potential for agriculture. And there is also no much mention of inputs. Maybe I think they were very minimal inputs from the commercial farmers, the ones who the rest of the people feel that the legislation is made to benefit them. But I also noticed that they didn't have much. Maybe they were just happy that the legislation is going to look after them, but there has to be some understanding of what their position is and what they are going to say. Now, on this part of the traditional leaders, I think we have just a problem here because the traditional leaders were not excluded in the public hearings. I remember in Mpumalanga they came out very clear as traditional leaders and they were recognized and had their inputs. But now it seems to me that there is a difference between traditional leaders and the house of traditional leaders. Therefore, this problem number of the house is the one we should address. Therefore, that's my question would be, what would we lose then if it is taken to that house of traditional leaders? So that if we want to avoid that situation, what had happened last time when the legislation was turned back by the president because he was also convinced that it did not go to the house. Maybe there should be a way of designing how it is presented to them because it's clearly it does not involve any cultural things that needs that house. But now, because they are having two platforms, they are having a platform as the traditional leaders among the communities where they have authority, where they also have that practice of distributing land in a way that is not conducive to agriculture. But now at the same time, they know it very well that they have the responsibility to make sure that agricultural land is used only for agricultural land. And they know that part, they maintain it. So I want to weigh if there can be much loss if it is made to, if it taken to that house, rather than wait until it is sent back because someone argues and up to the Supreme Court that his house was not involved. Those are the things I think are
important for us to understand and to be helped by the team. Otherwise, I'm very happy. Thank you for this information. It tells us that if things are done well and close all the corners, we will be moving somewhere. I'm not sure, Dr. Manenja, about your example of Toloveni, because as I know, the land that those people are fighting that it must not be used is not used for any agriculture. There's no production. There's no possible production there. That metal, which is on the surface, is dirty and not healthy. It's only that environmentalists don't want that place to be disturbed. They worry about insects and other things. It's not for agriculture. That one is used for consumption. Otherwise, I think let's have now a clear understanding from the department of response of all those areas that were opposing so that we definitely move forward, because I also feel that the legislation has to go forward. On communication, I think the department is just too lazy here. The department has got all the means of communication. They print pamphlets, they print leaflets, they have an officer, a class officer in every ward. I think they are just not using the relevant capacities that they have. But thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Honorable Thapa. Honorable Ntate Masipa.
Chairperson, thank you very much. Thank you to colleagues that just did their presentation, the department and the parliamentary content advisors. Chair, I think my colleagues kind of covered a lot of areas. I've got a few areas that I need to cover in terms of the presentation that was just received. So, Chair, I see a problem, and the problem really is from at the beginning when we started with this particular bill, and I still remember the DG made it very, very clear that this bill is for commercial agriculture, land that is zoned, land that is commercially farmed. And issues that were raised here were land owner, and the content advisors really picked it up quite nicely. I actually forgotten about it. But I think if you look at the way they are really addressing it to us, is that, you know, land owner here is... There are landowners that have got real rights, and there are landowners that are having informal rights. And those with informal rights did make their voice very clear that, you know, whose land are you protecting, because, you know, we don't have title deeds, you know. And I think the definition maybe, you know, needs to be made clear if you are going to cover the, call it the communal land. So I just wanted to make that point. But followed by one point that I think is very important, and I think this is what I picked up from the mining. The mining guys are saying preservation, you know, why don't you go for conservation, you know. The preservation, they feel, is just too hard. It's a term that they really think that it could make it easier. But I just wanted to hear if they might... really explain. I can't remember, but I think that for me was something that the mining guys were really very strong on. The issue around the farmer, which excludes the farm workers in terms of their tenure rights, you know, loosely, as I said, you know, the informal rights that they have got on the farms, you know, I think is key, because it could seriously be contested in courts as well. But I think what is very important that I'm also realizing is that we did not really have their input in terms of this particular bill. But I mean, it was publicized, so they had the option either to come and make their representation or not. But we did not have their input. The cost and administrative burden, I think, is a serious issue that we have to really acknowledge. The rural municipalities do not have the budget to implement even the smallest basic stuff that they need to do to carry activities in the rural municipality. So yes, I do agree that the cost and the burden and most municipalities are extremely resource constrained, and that we have to really understand that is going to be a problem. But the other issue is that when we extend this bill now to obviously to the rural areas, and we're thinking of zoning the land, but I mean primarily, you know, as defined, the rural land is primarily agricultural. But we know that traditional leaders have got a problem with SPLUMA, you know, the planning, because it takes a bit of their power and their control, give it over to the municipality as such in terms of the planning. So I think the importance here is that, you know, consultation with the National House of Traditional Leaders needs to take place. And obviously, you know, although we had some of the traditional leaders really presenting before us, but I do think that, you know, for us to encounter no problems going forward, we should definitely really consider that the traditional leaders are going to really be important. I mean, the House of Tradition, not the traditional leaders, the individual representation, but the House of the Traditional Leaders. I know that you said that we consulted them 8 years ago. It's too long. I don't think it's relevant right now. We might have to really consider that very, very serious. Yeah. And I think the issue is, the one issue that was highlighted, which I agree with, is that commercial farm land, you know, they are surveyed while the rural areas are not surveyed. So that's really serious, because when you control, or when you start now preserving, and when you start now making, you know, legal binding laws to arrest or to serve charges for those that are not really using the land in not in accordance, you've got to have, you know, some bylaws that really, or whatever, you know, the laws that are really guiding those particular land to be serving the purpose that they need to serve. I'm just not comfortable, and I'm just going to raise my my discomfort with regards to the answers that we have received from the department. That you know, the I think the gentleman at the back from the legal services did indicate that the National House of Traditional Leaders is not, we're not really forced to, but I beg to differ. I don't think that I would really take that as you know, given that we need to follow that route. I noted that one of the colleagues from agriculture said that, you know, there is provision, you know, provisions have been made in the bill for extensive consultation, although they might be in that particular bill, but I do not think that that provision really go to the extent of the traditional House of Traditional Leaders. So I just want to caution that I do not think that that address that you say that Regulation 35. I think it will be on assumption that Regulation 35 kind of address that, but I do not think that it does. Yeah, and you go further to say that the bill's aim is to capacitate traditional leaders when making decision. I don't agree. But I think just the last point, Chair, on the shortcoming of the SALA, doesn't take care of land owned by the state. I think I agree. But I also, you know, support the inputs that were made by our colleagues from the content advisory team. I think they made really serious, valid points that when we really go deeper into the deliberations, we got to really make sure that we get that presentation as well, just to really kind of compare notes in terms of what we are given by the department and what we have got there, so that, you know, we can really make a better contribution to this particular bill. But I do think that we need to carefully really go through this line by line and making sure that areas of concern are addressed. Otherwise, we're going to just be back in the seventh term re-looking at the very same bill again. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Comrade. Oh, honorable members, I would have raised a number of issues on the matters of traditional leaders and their consultation. But I think honorable members have covered me in that regard. But perhaps as a matter of way forward is to ascertain if we have been compiled the report and brought it before the House, wouldn't it be then when the bill is sent to the NCOP, simultaneously be sent to the National House of Traditional Leaders and their respective provinces? I'd like to gain guidance in that regard. But also in terms of the mining house that came before the committee, there is the aspect of rehabilitation, which seems to be left up until the end, rather than being done simultaneously with mining operations. And we have visited before while I was wearing the cap of being the whip in the Fifth Parliament in the Committee on Mineral Resources, that a number of mines like Richards Bay Minerals is actually doing simultaneous rehabilitation where the land is rehabilitated right at the same time as they mine, and they are planting forestry, particularly for traditional leaders in and around the area they mine, who seem to be doing well in that regard. So I'd want to ascertain as to why would mining houses be left to leave rehabilitation to the last end and not be held accountable. What would then the bill be doing in ensuring and safeguarding that mining land is actually brought back to agricultural use? And is there a need to engage, therefore, with the Department of Mineral Resources in that regard? On the other inputs that was raised, does this lead to also, as the department had alluded to, maybe there is no direct clash with some of the legislation that has been brought forward by the Department of Environmental Affairs, and I'd like you to speak to that in terms of what could be the possibilities of engaging the Department of Environmental Affairs in that regard, and what are the possible clashes from your view that may exist in that regard. That would be all on my side, honorable members.
Unfortunately, I'm unable to respond on the question of whether the committee can refer the bill after it has sent a report to the House. Because, well, actually what I can say, Chair, the reason for referral is not only compliance, but to get the views of the National House. So, as the State Law Advisor has indicated, the bill is with Parliament now, despite the reasons that have been provided, and also by the JTM. There is nothing that stops the committee from referring the bill to the National House. So it makes sense for the committee to if they feel there is a need to refer it now while they are still processing or are going to process the bill, in case the National House has some inputs on the bill for the committee to effect those, to refer it after the committee has already submitted a report to the House to repeat the purpose, because the NCOP has its own processes. I'll make an attempt on this one. Probably the department can assist. What the bill seeks to do is to protect agricultural land. I will assume that in cases where mining has already taken over agricultural land, there isn't much that the bill can do about it. But the bill, when passed into law, can prevent future invasion of agricultural land by mining activities. I will assume that it's up to the authority, whichever, whether it's the Mineral Resources Department or its environment, that issue a mining license to put that requirement for rehabilitation to take place. If rehabilitation comes at the tail end, maybe someone was sleeping on duty, or it also depends on what's on the license, on the mining license. I think that's all that I've captured.
Dr. Manesh?
Yeah, thanks, Chair. I think most of the input from members were basically comments, which we welcome and appreciate, and in a way saying this engagement is helpful in terms of how we move forward. But also in terms of the sequencing, just one comment that Honorable Chabot, made about the sequencing of engagement at the committee level. So we are looking at this as part sort of that beginning of deliberations and engagement. One of the things that the committee must demonstrate is that it has engaged quite carefully with the submissions from members of the public. So having had the responses from the department and responses to what the stakeholders have raised, what we were attempting to do here is to bring all this together and say, this is what members of the public say, this is what the department has said, but we did not go to an extent of saying, this is what you should do. What we're trying to do is to say, these are the facts, and as you're going to begin to engage and deliberate, you should have this thing in the background. Yes, we can do it differently, I don't dispute that, but that's how we thought we can engage around these issues. And the responses now and how you have responded and articulated certain views and positions already with state law advisors present and the legal services present, they are beginning to take these issues up, because in a way some kind of direction is beginning to emerge out of what you have been raising in terms of how do we move forward, and that helps them to begin to say, oh, on this, but in this particular issue, this is how the committee would like to move. And you will see as we proceed with deliberations how they captured some of the input. So it's this is how we structured it. It could be done. It can be done differently. It's not cast in stone. Honorable Gaba, yes. About Toloven. It may be a wrong example, but in terms of what I don't know the area, I've not been there, but in terms of what I am reading,
there's a whole lot of issues around water and the impact, mining on water and how that impacts on food production and all that. But I think it's a subject we can take it outside of this week. I must agree, I don't know the area, so I will believe you when you say. Thank you. But probably our colleagues from the department, I think there were some questions which it required our colleagues from the department to make inputs. Thank you.
You may proceed.
Good day, good day, Chairperson, good day, members of the committee. Thank you for the opportunity to respond to some of the issues that has been raised. To start with, the one in relation to traditional complicity of traditional authorities, I think the intention of the bill currently is that most of the traditional areas are not well surveyed, as some have already indicated. It is important that we survey those areas and be able to support them in line with the level of need. Currently, most of the applications that we are receiving in the department are mainly commercial, and that translates into us not necessarily serving this other grouping of community. And therefore, with part two of the evaluation, the intention is that we'll be able to evaluate and survey this area and be able to, at some point, have public-private partnership for support of those areas. If I can cite an example, we find that we have these big tractors that are not necessarily geared to a smallholder in communal space. So that will also support and guide what can assist the traditional areas to be supported from the agricultural space. There's also alignment with this SPLUMA. Section 9 of the bill makes provision for that alignment, in that it also indicates that when the municipalities are dealing with municipal special development framework, they should be able to know where is their high-value agricultural land and be able to, as part of their plan, integrate and plan for those areas. Also, with Chapter 5 of the Special Land Use Management Act, where they are dealing with land use schemes. So there is quite alignment with that, in such a way that agriculture will be able to allocate their resources, both human and financial, when dealing with the provincial agricultural sector plan. There is also provision in the bill that makes for monitoring. That is in Section 23. In Section 23, there's indication of performance assessment framework, where there will be evaluation annually to check the progress that has been made in terms of preserving and the land that we have lost. So for that, it will also give indication on how the province and national have been able to protect land, and such a national report will be published. There has been indication in relation to communal land that the governance in the communal land. Our understanding of practicality of this bill is that if we have evaluated the area, we will take this information and be able to share with the traditional authorities in that community. So there will be, as part of our regulation, to indicate how best you can be able to manage areas that are in the space. I'll give an example. Currently, if you look into the small holdings, they are keeping the bees, but the management of the small holding is not similar to the one which is in the commercial far agricultural area. So such area also will require indication of how we are engaging and sharing that information. Currently, we have been trying with the Conservation of Agricultural Resources Act, which only informs the farmers involved. But I think this PDALP is going to make provision for better engagement. There's also indication that majority of smallholders feel they're excluded. To some extent, currently, with the PDALP, when we are looking into the agricultural sector plan, we'll be able to divide these categories of farmers and guide support for those different categories. And as we monitor, we'll be able to have informed data that is going to indicate how much of the application have we received from this smallholder and how much have we received from the commercial sector, other than now where most of the application are just coming from the commercial sector. Indeed, we take comments that we should be able to use Dukoro. Currently, we are using conservation committees, but as I indicated, they are only targeted for farmers, both livestock and cropping. So in the future, we could be able to look into this other platform to see how we can integrate them. This bill is quite helpful if you look currently what is happening in the mining, that we do provide comments, but sometimes those comments are disregarded. However, if we have a provision that do not exclude the mining, it will allow the department and the mining department to evaluate the space and under intergovernmental consideration be able to provide for what could be conducive for the overall benefit of the public. Currently, there are some of the areas which are mined and thereafter there is no agricultural activities going on, which those areas could have, if we could have evaluated and looked into the long term, we could have had a balanced approach and maybe to shift those mining activities to other areas. I think from the race relations, the view was more in terms of concern around the provision of land generally. So where we are sitting as a department, and mainly they were concerned around the gender, the listing of the gender and the nationality, that it appears as if we do not want to have everyone else inclusive. The understanding of the bill is that if we have such type of data, it will assist us in the long run. We know who is being supported and who is applying as earlier indicated, and be able to know how are we going to target and promote certain areas for the benefit of those who have been previously excluded. I think some of the areas will be able to address in relation to the regulation. Currently, the definition that we are having for agriculture, it does cover the wild animals. The agricultural purposes definition does indicate that in the practices we also include wild animals, forestry, and logging as some of those agricultural activities. I may not be able to address all of them, but I think those which I have covered, my principal will be able to address them. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair. Members, I think just to touch on issues that my colleague has not touched on, Honorable Kappa raised the issue around ownership, particularly in communal areas. People who say, you come and talk to us about this land, but we do not have title deeds and things like that. The department is busy with the bill, and I'm sure it's a line that you've heard a few times, the communal land bill, where rights ownership and all those things will be dealt with in terms of that bill. This one specifically is not dealing with it. However, and I think this will also respond to Honorable Masipa, what I said earlier is that the information that the department will collect through the agroecological information, it will help the traditional leaders when they're making decisions. Not that it's one of the... It does not talk to the issues around consultation with the National House of Traditional Leaders. The extensive consultations that the department is going to do in the specific areas will include traditional leaders. And the information collected will also facilitate, help them in making decisions around whether, around the use in the land and allocation. And then the other comment was around using the term conservation instead of preservation. We have responded quite in detail in the previous, when the department submitted its responses, and maybe just to bring it back, it was, our response was that the term conservation is used in terms of CARA, and it is defined as the relation to the natural agricultural resources, which includes the protection, recovery, and reclamation of those resources, whereas preservation in PDAL refers to the protection of agricultural land from anything that will cause its current agricultural potential, capability, suitability, and use to change or to deteriorate. So we did consider the comment by the IRR, and we responded to that one in detail. And then again, the comment by Honorable Kappa that we are lazy around communication. I did mention that in the regulation, we're going to thresh out in detail how this communication is going to take place. So we're not, in as much as we're talking about the Gazette, the regulation then say, we will then say, how do we provide this information? How do we consult your radios, language spoken, and the notices, and then the use of agricultural officers in the provinces? So extension of, so we will use any available avenue to make sure that we consult adequately and we reach the people that we need to reach. I think a lot were comments made, and those are taken into consideration. I think when the clause by clause happens, we have noted them. We will, in consultation with the Parliamentary Legal Services and the Office of the Chief Legal Advisor, we will keep raising them as and when we come to the different clauses during the close by close deliberations.
Thank you, Honourable Members, Honourable Chairperson. I think my colleagues have covered most of the comments by Honourable Members. I think comments from Honourable Marshall about the inclusion of the small-scale farmers, and that is what we're going to do. I think members all covered that, but the first would be the surveying of the land on which they farm, because it starts from there. Then you're able to allocate and support. So at the moment they are farming, but we're not even sure where they are farming, and some of them are not even farming. The minute you farm on an unsurveyed and unmapped land, and it becomes difficult to apportion support. That definitely will be taken care of, and is included in the it's implied in most clauses of the bill. Honourable Klape, on the yes, I think Honourable Klape was mainly in support, and we happy that and also based on the public hearings, there was overwhelming support, and I think the one thing that has not happened over time is that we are pretty a bit late, because most of the prime agricultural land has been lost, and we are not able to reverse that process. At least we need to start now to preserve that which we still have, the remnants, if I might say that, because most of the prime agricultural land has been taken away. As a matter of fact, even the ones that state owns, I can cite it, even one of the research station in Stellenbosch, which is state land, there's a lot of attempts to have it converted into housing. That just goes out to show how far the private sector would go to try and steal away. And I know the definition that often gives a challenge, whether Is it food security or is it agriculture? We're not going to complete it here, but agriculture happens for food production and then ultimately food security. And the real, it's not the only reason why PDALBA has to come into place, but we are one country that doesn't have a comprehensive map of its agricultural resources, land, soil, in the main. So we need to be able to, this bill makes provision for us to be able to sit and know which part of the country, up to basic geolocation, can be farmed with what. That's what it will tell us. That helps with, it will help, in fact, for government to be able to plan as far as the, up to the what level to plan adequately. So that is one of the reasons. And Honorable Kapa, I think, yeah, most we're covered. And also with the Honorable Chairperson, we're quite comfortable with the process, though we are in your hands, we know this is your bill, but if it were to start with the House of Traditional Leaders, we'll be very quite comfortable with that, and we're ready to support the committee if the process goes that way. Other than that, I think my colleagues have covered Honorable Masipa. The cost and admin burden, we'll try as best as we can, because this is a national legislation, and it's one of the unique and beautifully drafted bills that incorporates, other than, in fact, out of all the pieces of legislation that the department administers, if this is passed and assented into law, it will be the only one that acknowledges and recognizes the different roles played by the different spheres of government. So it does have specific reference to MEC and specific reference to municipalities. It does that. So if this will be an exemplary piece of legislation that acknowledges the current realities in the country, it does go to that extent. The issue of preservation was taken care of. The traditional displumat was attended to by Honorable Masipa. And yes, the surveying as well. And I think, yeah, the question by Honorable Chairperson also hit that for. We submit the Chairperson and Honorable Members.
Any further input from the State Law Advisor and Parliament Legal Services?
Just one quick comment on the issue around the tagging of the bill. And this is the first step in the parliamentary process, that once a bill is introduced, it goes to a joint tagging mechanism. There will be a view from the State Law Advisor, and there will be a view that will be expressed by parliamentary legal advisors in as far as tagging is concerned. Now, a terminology is developed around this, and it says a bill, whether you classify it as a 75, as a 76, it has knock-on effects. But we don't tag bills based on knock-on effects. We tag bills based on the subject that the bill seeks to regulate. And I think this is the balance that we need to maintain. A bill could affect provinces, could affect traditional leaders, but that is not necessarily the subject of regulation. A bill affects all of us. If a law has to be passed today, it affects all of us. But that is not the basis of the tagging, is whether it fits within the schedules of the Constitution for us to tag it accordingly. So I'm just Chair, making this point because I can hear the discussions now and then go to traditional leaders, but this is not a bill that deals specifically with customs and traditions. There is a knock-on effect, and I think we can agree on that. But that is not the subject of the bill. Thank you very much, Chair. That's the input I thought I should make just to allay the concerns.
Thank you. It's from Parliament Services, State Law Advisor.
Yes, thank you, Chair. I'm in complete agreement with my colleague. As indicated earlier, we express a view before the bill is introduced. Once a bill is introduced, it becomes Parliament's bill. So it's for Parliament to decide on the processing of the bill, whether the bill should be referred to the traditional House or not. But I'm in complete agreement with my colleague. Chair, something else I picked up during the presentations today is there was a lot of discussion in respect of land reform. What I just wanted to clarify, Chair, is that this bill is not a land reform bill. The purpose of this bill is to provide for food security in terms of Section 27 of the Constitution. And in terms of that section, the state is obligated to bring legislative measures to ensure that the public has sufficient access to food. That is the purpose of this bill. Thank you.
Thank you, Honorable Members. There are the responses to the comments and questions that were raised. Any other questions, comments on the end, Honorable Kaba?
Thank you, Chair, and thank you very much for all the clarity and the confidence on the intention of the bill, because this was the challenge that we had, that in all public hearings, people had to be told, sometimes not listening, that it's not about that, it's about this protection of the land. But many people would preempt it, no, we like the bill, but let's put those things outside and be a lengthy input. But now what I wanted to come with is this one of the land in communal areas. Maybe I'll need some clarity here also. I grew up in the Transkei, and there the traditional leaders, before maybe their authority was eroded or before somehow some of them became corrupt, there is clear understanding that this land is for residences, this one is for grazing, and this one is for cropping. And this has been maintained very, very successfully. And it's only now that there's this now erosion of this authority. If you go to around Mthatha, you can see beautiful land that they were grazing, sheep grazing, which are now being occupied. So it means something has happened with the authority that the traditional leaders had. I don't know whether they became Lake City, they came Lake City there, or their authority was taken somehow, but there is something which I think maybe in this legislation we should check. If that remaining authority cannot be useful, because agricultural land is there as agricultural land, is only some misunderstanding or mischief that makes agricultural land to be used for something else. I remember, because when I grew up, we were very happy when the land was being divided, it's going to be fenced, you felt that, no, we're going to go to school and not look after cattle. But that was the situation, and many people were removed from good areas to be in other places, and rocky areas made to be grazing rather than for plowing. It was good. So to some extent, that traditional understanding of the land administration and understanding of agricultural potential of the land has been there. If maybe there's a way of understanding and harnessing that process, attention.
Thank you, Chair. I think it was, we were all about going towards the end to say we have understand one another, we'll see how we complement one another. Now, the only problem that I see is that our state laws
they didn't take the issue of together we shall govern with our own people. It is not that we are defying what they are telling us as the state laws, that this bill, it is not for customary laws and whatever. But we are saying consultation is one of the most important things, because we want to govern our country very well. We want to govern our country with our people. We want our people to be with us. We want them to have a buy-in, because we were there, out there with them. We could hear what they are saying. You know, traditional leaders, they don't have that big problem. What they need is consultation. Just to consult them. Just consultation only. There is nothing else that they need. It does not mean that when they say consult us, it means that they will say this is... We know them. We were born in those areas. So I think we need to move away from the olden days where when the law says this is what should happen, it happened in that way. Let us assist one another by trying to help one another so that we can all govern this country together. The lawmakers, the people at grassroots level, they need to understand one another. They are the people who are voting for this government to be there. If we don't consider them, we say, because this is the law, we are going to be in trouble. People can now raise up a chair. Nowadays, people buy magamautu, but buy mela, balwa. They are no longer like people of those olden days that would fold their hands. They will keep us on the corner, take us to the courts, and we can't be able to pass the law if we don't just consult them. Consultation. Thank you.
Thank you, Honorable Memata. Honorable Ndate Masipa.
Thank you, Chairperson. Apologies. Thanks to our legal services and our colleagues that just gave their responses. Chair, I have gone through the bill once again just to really make sure that I am on one page. I do not see anywhere in this, normally the definitions, they will bring some elements of traditional leaders and communal land, and in the definition as such, there is absolutely nothing. So, which means this bill as it stands has not really considered traditional leaders or the house of traditional leaders at all. And I think that's the point that we are arguing against, or we are arguing on, to say that I think it is important that we really seriously, if this bill is about to address the communal land, it has to be explicit. At the moment, it is just implicit in terms of its application to rural or to communal areas. So I thought, let me just make that statement. I know we are going to deal with the chair ourselves, but I think gloss by gloss, we'll have to look at that. But I do not think that initially your bill at the department, you got to be honest, it was never really intended for communal land or for the traditional leaders. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Honorable Ndate Masipa. Any further input? That's all from Honorable Members. Any response on the last follow-up comments or clarity seeking? Dr. Manage?
No, Chair, thank you. I think most were comments, really. It wasn't... I don't think there were anything for us to respond. Just use this opportunity to say, when we say traditional leaders, we must also remember we're talking about traditional communities. So it's not only about a leader. Sometimes decisions are taken by a leader only. So this is about traditional communities and involving them in decision-making. Just remember one thing, Chair. And our colleagues in the department are saying, well, we've consulted. The challenge we have in Parliament is when the legislation comes, we look what is there. And if you look at the list of the people that or organizations that we consulted, even in the Ingwenyama transport is not there. So there are a lot of things that we can say we've done this, but if it's not here, and maybe that's why sometimes we read what's there, and our advice to the committee is on the basis of what's written. Thank you.
Thank you, Dr. Manenja, honorable members. That was the briefing and presentations from our content advisor, legal services, state law advisor, as well as parliament legal services, as well as from the department on the bill that we have been busy deliberating on, the preservation and development of agricultural land bill. We have come to the end of our agenda, honorable members, but suffice to say that we will be, as a means of moving forward, bringing the motion of desirability before the committee so that we can engage on that. And then we will proceed to deliberate on it. That is all we had today, honorable members. I'd like to take therefore the opportunity to thank all our stakeholders internally, our content advisors, the state law advisor, parliament legal services, and the officials of the Department of Agriculture, Land Reform and Rural Development for this fruitful engagement that we have had. I want to remind honorable members that there will be a plenary hybrid meeting, Goodwood Chamber, at 2 o'clock. So be reminded, and those that will be joining on the hybrid, please join timelessly at 1 o'clock. Allow the honorable members to thank our staff for this sitting that we have had, physical meetings. And once again, apologize for having started late due to the challenges we had on transport and traffic getting here. Have a wonderful afternoon and a great week ahead. The meeting stands adjourned. Thank you.
Thank you. I'm going to say that.